Welcome back. It's a Thursday, the 18th day of April, 2024. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and it's kind of an unusual day today. So far, we haven't seen Israel retaliate against the latest retaliation for their attack on the Iranian embassy and so forth. So, at least for now, we haven't had the escalation that so many of us are expecting, which is at least moderately good news. There's more good news, too. The young girl named Kaylee Gain, who literally had her head repeatedly slammed into the pavement by a reprobate attempting to kill her, is actually out of the hospital, out of intensive care, greatly improved, and even walking again less than 2 months after that brutal and sadly widely watched demonstration of what's happened to a once free society. On the election rigging trail and the circus show trial by the scumbag Mershon in New York, Donald Trump has said that effing with us when it comes to Barron's graduation, and the so-called judge is wanting to make sure that they punish him every way they can, is, said Trump, a mistake, i.e. he thinks the American people can see through it. And one excused juror has actually come out and explained to the American people just what a sham the whole voir dire process for picking the jurors who are going to execute the guy actually is. All of them, she said, have prior opinions, and in the leftist hub of New York, and when they pick the jurors to come in, do you really think it's going to be otherwise, folks? And here's an interesting story that I don't actually have time to give the examination it deserves. Comes from the Daily Mail, of all places. And it says there's new and troubling research which reveals just how many Americans are willing to commit vote fraud in order to get, quote-unquote, their candidate elected. The survey comes 29 weeks before an election in which election integrity is frequently cited as a concern, they say. Are you kidding me? We all know the election has already been rigged, and the super trials that are going on to make sure that it stays rigged are just one more indication. But fully more than one quarter of those surveyed said, yeah, the ends justify the means. They'd be more than willing to commit one or another kind of fraud in order to make sure that the election turns out the way that it's supposed to. Men were slightly more likely to say they cheat than women. They claim that the number of people willing to cheat for the Biden-Fuhrer are roughly equal to those who think that Trump needs to be elected, or it's already all done anyway. But the most cheating-prone group, it says, is young people. Fully 52% of adults aged 18 through 39 think the ends justify the means. Hey, they've been taught that. Why wouldn't they? And they're more than willing to bend the rules to get their preferred candidate over the line. And that's much higher than the 15% of those aged 65 and above who would cheat. Whether that means, quote, voting in multiple states, destroying or altering mail-in ballots of friends or family or somebody else, or paying a fellow voter just a few bucks to tick the right box. They might even give somebody false information if they didn't like them about where, when, and how to cast their ballot. I'll suggest, folks, that what this poll really shows is that more and more Americans recognize that what we're seeing here is not just a sick joke, it's an absolute abomination of a system that once upon a time people had some faith in, but now they know they'd be a fool to even think the election might be honest. Case in point, here's a quote from deep down in this article from the Daily Mail that I think is, funny. That is, if you have the understanding of what it's really implying, because it's telling, too. From what the Daily Mail admits is the left-leaning Brennan Center for Justice, sick, voter fraud almost never happens.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Quote, extensive research reveals that fraud is very rare, voter impersonation is virtually non-existent, and many instances of alleged fraud are, in fact, mistakes by voters or administrators who just innocently want the senile guy to win by any means necessary. This from a 2022 report masquerading as research. And when it comes to telling the Clintonian truth, let me point out a couple of, well, they should be obvious things, but they're not. Many instances of alleged fraud. Let's see. If you have, say, millions of instances of fraud, and in fact, hundreds, maybe even thousands of them, are mistakes, that would constitute many, wouldn't it? Unless you think of them as a tiny fraction of a percent. You see how words can be spun if people don't know what the hell they're talking about, or worse still, they're willing to drink the Kool-Aid and accept the lie? But there's more. Remember that claim that voter impersonation is virtually non-existent? So in fairness, I have to put it this way. Voter impersonation is really not the issue. Lots of dead people voting is. And they have trouble really impersonating anybody. on their own. From there, let's talk just briefly about that voter rig from New York. This is from Jack Phillips via the Epoch Times. A juror who was excused from serving, what a joke, on the Manhattan show trial for actually elected President Donald Trump provided details about the questions that so-called potential jurors were asked as part of voir dire. Kara McGee told captive media outside the courtroom on Tuesday that she was dismissed, but she believed she could be impartial, adding, still, it'd be very difficult for anyone really in this country to not come to this without prior opinions, unquote. And yeah, that at least is believable. We all have prior opinions on the defendant, she said, unless you've been living in a cardboard box. Adding that she was excused, supposedly, because of her job in the cybersecurity sector. And this is the part that I think is really interesting. Asked about her personal feelings on President Trump, she said, quote, I'm not a fan. Which kind of makes your host wonder, does that mean she doesn't hate him enough to be an effective liar in order to be able to get him like they want? But honestly, I think this nails it. Why doesn't she like the guy? Well, she said it's because of how she believed he handled the COVID-19 pandemic response. She didn't pronounce it right, but right there, she's not enough of a knee-jerk to meet their criterion, and certainly not able to help cover it up. She also provided some insight on the questions asked of the so-called jurors, one of which was, quote, do you have opinions about the ability of a former sitting president to be tried in a court of law, sick, and unquote. And she said she thought the way people answered that question might have showed how they felt about the case. And that, your host suggests, actually speaks volumes. Like, for example, if you said, hey, this is no court of law, you're not going to get to take your shot at the guy. And as for this one, do you have any opinions about legal limits for campaign finance donation amounts, unquote. It's kind of like asking, are we really going to be able to snow you with the BS we're fixing to shovel here? For his part, the article points out that President Trump said, we were supposed to have unlimited strikes when it came to picking our jury. Then I was told we only had 10. Not nearly enough when we were purposely given the second worst venue in the country. Which is, of course, the real point. This was never intended to be a jury of his peers. It's a lynch mob. Here next, another one of those stories that, while tragic, in hindsight, is certainly not surprising. What's interesting is the fact that they continue to ignore it in the waste stream Ministry of Truth masquerading as media, but we shouldn't. Because, folks, it's fixing to happen again. Epidemic of 15 to 19-year-olds dropping dead in schools and dorms across both America and Canada, says the headline via globalresearch.ca, in just 1 month, April 2023, courtesy of a piece by Dr. William Makis, a Canadian physician with expertise in radiology, oncology, and immunology, writing for Global Research. And it begins with literally page after page of obituaries. First from Jenna, Louisiana. 15-year-old Jenna high school student Cameron Shelton died in class 11 a.m. April 18th, 2023. 19-year-old Milwaukee Marquette University student Cameron Ray was found dead in the residence April 17th, same year. Charlotte, North Carolina, 18-year-old Myers Park High School senior Baron Alexander died suddenly early morning April 16th. 16-year-old high school student Samuel Russell Campbell died suddenly. Tip City, Ohio, 17-year-old Tippecanoe High School student Carson Robbins died suddenly. 19-year-old Cornell University student, a Walter Johnson High School student, a Timberline High School tennis player, an Episcopal School of Dallas student, a 16-year-old Berkeley High School student, and on and on and on. And there's this, too, from Rice Lake, Wisconsin, where a struggling teen wrote, hi, I'm a 15-year-old sophomore at Rice Lake High School. To be honest, this year's been hard. It's taken people away from us, and as soon as we get back on our feet, another one is taken. We had, listen to this, folks, 6 student deaths throughout our district, and after every traumatizing moment, they hand the teachers a slip of paper to read off. It's always vague, never tells us how we're going to feel, and each time, the school brings in grief counselors, but you can guess what else they aren't told, folks. And my take, says the doctor in summary, found dead in dormer residence, cardiac arrest, died while at school, died after having migraine at school, died in early morning hours, died after brief illness, died during tennis practice at school, etc. None of this, he says, is normal. All of these deaths should be investigated for the possibility of post-COVID-19 mRNA vaccine sudden cardiac death or any role that the jabs may have played in these sudden unexpected deaths. This next story is one that I've touched on over the last week, but I think it's really important to go into a bit more detail. I'll start with a brief intro from former Assistant Treasury Secretary Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, who said, as he predicted back in early April, the police state got the Republicans to reconsider and pass their warrantless spying and home entries and you don't have no stinking Fourth Amendment gang rape of the Constitution again. And the Republican Speaker of the House, scumbag Mike Johnson, cast the deciding vote that nixed any requirements to actually have what was once quaintly called a warrant, which, notes Dr. Roberts, tells us all we need to know about rhinos, or Republicans. They're a big part of the problem. And what he calls super patriots, I will call them pseudo-patriotic idiots, will say, we have to do this to protect ourselves from terrorists. What, you mean the terrorists that occupy the House of Communists, the White House, and much of the Supreme Court? Or the ones that are streaming across the non-existent southern border, literally by the millions, unopposed? Huh?
Morons. I've got morons on my team.
These so-called patriots don't understand that if you don't have a constitution, folks, you don't have any protection. And by the way, included in that is the Second Amendment and the First Amendment with the rights to freedom of speech, assembly, and of course, to keep and bear arms, which they don't want you to have because they don't want you to live. And Dr. Roberts goes on to note that Ed Snowden, and we've talked about that part as well, have reported the situation is far more serious than even he thought, because a big part of the FISA Act is a section, Section 702, being enlarged to require every company and person that provides any Internet-related service, and guess what, folks, that's just about everything, to assist in gang-raping the Bill of Rights whenever the NSA comes calling. Which takes us to a piece by John W. Whitehead, entitled, in part, Warrantless Surveillance Makes a Mockery of the Constitution. And he begins by quoting George Orwell about Big Brother, and notes that Big Brother long ago sold us out to the highest bidder, which turns out to be the deep state variant thereof. But what's playing out now with the highly politicized tug of war over whether Section 702 of the misnamed Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which actually spies on everything, not just foreigners, because they call you foreign to their fake government, but whether or not it gets reauthorized by Congress, it doesn't just sell us out, it makes us literal slaves of the deep state. And note, he says, if you read the fine print, it really is a doozy. Because just as the misnamed USA Patriot Act was perverted from its stated alleged intent to fight terrorism abroad and instead used to covertly crack down on the American people, allowing Big Brother's three-letter agencies to secretly track Americans' financial activities, monitor their communications, and carry out wide-ranging surveillance of just about every kind on them, Section 702 has been used for a long time as an end run around the Constitution to allow Big Brother to collect the actual content of your conversations, whether they're phone calls, text messages, video chats, emails, or basically anything electronic, and we don't need no stinking warrant. Now, he notes, intelligence officials, SIC, are pushing to dramatically expand Big Brother's spying powers, effectively giving the government unbridled authority to force millions of Americans to spy on its behalf and even on themselves. Basically, Big Brother's deep state wants to turn the American people into extensions of Big Brother. Remember, Big Brother is watching you and listening. And as Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat of Oregon, explains, if you have access to any communications, the government can force you to help it spy. That means anyone with access to a server, a wire, a cable box, a Wi-Fi router, a phone, or a computer. So think for a moment, he says, about the millions of Americans working in buildings and offices in which communications are either stored or simply passed through. And this next part is particularly interesting and, yes, unnerving. After all, continues Senator Wyden, every office building in America has data cables running through it. The people are not just the engineers who install, maintain, or repair our communications infrastructure. There are countless others who could be forced to help the government spy, including those who clean offices and guard buildings. If this provision is enacted, and Big Brother intends to, the government, SIC, or what now passes for it, folks, can deputize any of these people against their will and force them, in effect, to become what amounts to an agent for Big Brother, kind of like the Stasi did in East Germany. For example, by forcing an employee to insert manually a thumb drive into a server at an office that they clean or guard at night. All of this could happen without any oversight whatsoever. The FISA court won't know about it. Congress won't know about it. And remember, folks, they lie to the FISA courts anyway, so does it really matter? Americans who are handed these directives, he says, will be forbidden from talking about it unless they can afford high-priced lawyers with security clearances who know their way around the, well, folks, anti-constitutional FISA court to begin with, in which case they're probably not exactly on your team if you think about it, they will have no recourse at all, unquote. Some of us saw this coming, but as Whitehead notes, it's amazing how quickly Section 702 has been steamrolled into an expansion of Big Brother's already massive surveillance powers. Remember, Big Brother doesn't like to be restricted by the chains of the Constitution in any way. And what Americans don't get, most of them anyway, is that even without Section 702 in play, Big Brother will still target the populace for warrantless, suspicionless mass surveillance because that's how the police state maintains its stranglehold on power. And all of these maneuvers are just the tip of the iceberg because, for all intents and purposes, we now have a fourth, or maybe some would say fifth, branch of government. The fourth branch came into existence without any electoral mandate, much less constitutional referendum, yet it possesses superpowers above and beyond those of any other government agency, save maybe the military, and maybe there's no difference. It's all-knowing, all-seeing, and all-powerful, and it operates beyond the reach of even fake presidents, Congress, the courts, and it marches in lockstep with the corporate elite who are really calling the shots in the D.C. swamp. And this techno-tyranny surveillance apparatus has become so entrenched and entangled with the police state apparatus that it's hard to know anymore where law enforcement ends and surveillance begins. They are now one and the same. And on any given day, the average American, he notes, is now monitored, surveilled, spied on, and tracked in more than 20 different ways by both Big Brother and its public-private partner, Eyes and Ears. So be aware of what you say, what you read, what you write, where you go, with whom you communicate, and whether or not your phone is even close to somebody else's phone, or whether or not you're in a place with just about anything electronic, because it's all being recorded, stored, and ultimately will be used against you. We don't have courts of law anymore, but it'll be used in one of those star chambers at a time and place of Big Brother's choosing. Privacy, as you've thought you've known it, has been dead for a long time, but now it's deader than a doornail with a wooden stake through the heart. And next, folks, he goes through a list, but you know it. Bottom line, Big Brother is watching you and listening to you and tracking you and predicting your moves to check out their AI prowess. Just about every branch of government, he continues, from the Postal Service to the Treasury Department and every TLA in between now has its own surveillance sector authorized, whether it's constitutional or not, and it's not, to collect data and spy on the American people. There are fusion and counterterrorism centers that gather all of the data from these smaller government spies, police, public health officials, transportation, etc., and make all of them accessible to those with the keys to the kingdom to maintain and control you and consolidate their power. These government snoops, he notes, are constantly combing through and harvesting vast quantities of our communications, our actions, literally everything, storing them in massive databases for years, and once this information, which is collected illegally and without probable cause, much less one of those stinking warrant things, is ingested into NSA servers, other Big Brother agencies, if they have the right connections anyway, can search through the databases to make criminal cases against the American people that have nothing to do with terrorism or even the pretense of a national security-related threat. Remember, folks, national security is another word for what was once called your constitutionally protected, God-given rights and freedoms. And as we've seen with Donald Trump, and as he points out correctly, you're next, it doesn't even remotely have to be what was once even called a crime. They just make stuff up, and I'm trying to be kind, and declare it to be whatever they declare it to be. The courts, as we've also seen, will rubber stamp it, and then the only question is, can we sell this crap to the public? Well, they're going to get conditioned to it, besides which, the AIs will help it be ever more palatable, as you've already seen, too. As Whitehead notes, talk about a system rife for abuse. No, folks, it's been tailored, engineered, and constructed explicitly for abuse. And now Big Brother wants us to believe, and you're a fool if you even entertain the notion, that we have nothing to fear from their mass spying programs because they're only trying to get the bad guys who are overseas. And you have to be an idiot to believe that statement, because the bad guys are coming in by the millions across the open southern border. Yeah, says Whitehead, don't believe it. Big Brother's definition of a bad guy is extraordinarily broad, except it's not broad enough to include the real bad guys who are running the system. And as he notes, what it means is Big Brother, government, has become the biggest lawbreaker of all. And it's telling, says Whitehead, that even after the revelation that the FBI, one of the most power-hungry and corrupt agencies in all of Big Brother's vast police state complex of power-hungry and corrupt agencies, misused the massive government surveillance program more than, you ready, 300,000 times in order to target American citizens, and we're still debating whether or not they should be allowed to continue to sidestep the Fourth Amendment. No, we're not debating it at all. We're being force-fed the crap. This is how our rights are routinely overruled and trampled underfoot. It works the same way every time. First, Big Brother, he says the government, but I'm going to use the proper term, seeks out extraordinary powers acquired in the wake of some contrived national crisis. In this case, warrantless surveillance powers intended to help the Big Brother spy on foreign targets suspected of engaging in terrorism. Remember, the real terrorists are going to get protection. And then they use those powers against the American people. According to FISA and the so-called court that oversees it, the FBI repeatedly misused Section 702 in order to spy on the communications of two vastly disparate groups of Americans, those involved in the George Floyd protests and those who may have taken part in the January 6th First Amendment protest to try to petition the government to address some grievances. Like a rigged election, they called it an insurrection, i.e. the Fedsurrection at the Capitol. According to the Brennan Center for Justice, he notes, Big Brother and his intelligence agencies conduct roughly 200,000 of these warrantless backdoor searches through Americans' private communications each and every year. No one is spared. Many of the targets have done nothing wrong whatsoever, and government minions have spied on the communications of protesters, members of Congress, crime victims, journalists, political donors, among many others. And they do spy on leftists too, folks, because how better to keep them under control than to blackmail them, as we have seen time and again. How else are they going to keep showers with the big guy, you know, daddy, out of the newspapers? And these liars may pretend that their spying on Americans is simply incidental, as though they didn't intend it. It was just an accident. Everyone knows that they're paying attention. They fully intend to collect and use this information. And according to the Wall Street Journal, it isn't limited to just eavesdropping of the kind you might expect. Quote, the Securities and Exchange Commission is deploying a massive government database called the CAT, or Consolidated Audit Trail, that monitors in real time the identity, transaction, and investment portfolio of everyone who thinks they are investing in things like the stock market. Journalist Leo Homan reports that Big Brother is also handing out $20 million in grants to police, mental health networks, universities, churches, and school districts to enlist their help in identifying Americans who just might be political dissidents or, potential extremists. And if you ask Big Brother, why are they doing this? Well, you get an answer right out of George Orwell and 1984. It's to keep America safe. But what it really is about, and Orwell had this right too, is control. We're dealing with a government, says Whitehead, approaching a conclusion here as if you couldn't already guess, that's so power-hungry, so paranoid, and so afraid of losing its stranglehold on power that it is literally waging war on anyone who dares to challenge their unconstitutional and increasingly unlimited authority. When the FBI is asking banks and other financial institutions to carry out dragnet searches of customer transactions warrantlessly and, of course, without probable cause because of indications of extremism. And here, folks, I'll pause just for a second because you know what they're talking about. We've already had the stories here. Maybe you bought a Bible with a credit card. Oh, no. Or worse still, you might have gone in and asked Big Brother's permission to buy a gun. And you know you're on the list then. You know it. We're all in trouble. And you don't even have to do anything illegal, nor do you even have to challenge Big Brother's authority. You don't even have to care about politics or even think you know something about your rights or care about those either. All you really need to do in order to be tagged as a suspicious character, flagged for surveillance, and eventually placed on a Big Brother government watch list is to live in the United States, i.e. if you draw breath, you're suspicious. So, concludes Whitehead, as long as Big Brother is allowed to weaponize its 360-degree surveillance technologies to flag you as a threat to national security, especially if you haven't done anything wrong, it's simply a matter of time before you find yourself wrongly accused, investigated, that's a misnomer, isn't it, and then confronted by police based on a data-driven algorithm or risk assessment called together by a computer program run by artificial intelligence. Let me add this, folks. It's not fear-mongering if it's undeniably, demonstrably true, maybe even understated. But it's also a warning. Whether it's your telephone, your television, or your toaster oven, unless it's close to 20 years old, If it's electronics and it's got microprocessors in it and it's connected to the internet, whether you know it or not, it's listening to you, or worse. So forewarned is forearmed, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.